Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Monday, October 16th, 2017. I am Jason Powell. Join me for live coverage of WWE Raw tonight at ProWrestling.net as the show airs on USA Network. And stick around, because coming up after this brief break for non-members, my review of the Ring of Honor Global War Chicago iPay-per-view event. The Ring of Honor Global Wars event aired on Fight TV's app as well as on the Ring of Honor website on Sunday night. It was technically in Villa Park, Illinois at the Odeum Expo Center. And this was a pay-per-view that ROH offered for $19.99. Not a traditional pay-per-view, but again, those online platforms. And they delivered. They gave fans quite a bit for that $20 purchase. The show went nearly 4 hours. I don't feel like it needed to go as long as it did, which we'll get into. But, I guess two ways of looking at that. I might as well get into it here. One, hey, they over-deliver. You know, you tune in expecting a three-hour show, and they go long. And some fans are going to love that. Others, especially if you're on the East Coast, the show ended shortly before midnight, and maybe you got more than you were bargaining for. They had Kenny Omega in the main event, and I'm sure that's what a lot of people were watching for. And just not that you can't go back and watch it, but if you were kind of expecting this to be a three-hour show, not that there was a window on it, you know, it tended to be a little long. I could have done without the 15-minute intermission that they do during the show. Some are going to like that, gives them a chance to take a quick break, whatever. So again, there's going to be kind of multiple viewpoints on that. Also could have done without the popcorn match that they had that we'll get into. But again, overall, you know, for $20, this was a hell of a show. And featured the Bullet Club prominently, some talent from New Japan Pro Wrestling, and was just a good all-around wrestling show. Let's work our way through this here. They opened things up with a video package on ROH and New Japan Pro Wrestling. Featured Kenny Omega pretty prominently in that. And then we went to the broadcast team of Ian Riccaboni and BJ Whitmer. Whitmer on color commentary. Usually it's Colt Cabana. If Colt can't be there because of a booking, or in this case because he was wrestling later on the show, they usually go with Whitmer. I prefer Colt Cabana, but Whitmer does an okay job. Riccaboni kind of was setting up the opening match when he was interrupted, because rather than get the entrances for that opening match, we got ROH champion Cody coming out instead. And he delivered a promo. The fans were chanting, "Thank you, Cody." And he ended up going off on Roman Reigns without mentioning Roman by name. Apparently there was a tweet that Roman responded to where Cody had, I think he did it in an interview or something, but Cody was claiming that he's the top draw in wrestling, and Roman had responded to that in a negative way. And Cody ended up taking a couple of jabs at Roman without mentioning him by name, saying that he just assumed the tactical vest he wears was covering up his gut and a failed drug test, but it's actually jealousy. And then he was going to have former ROH owner, Kerry Silken, kiss the ring, but Kerry didn't look like he was in the mood to play along. So he decided to have a fan enter the ring and kiss the Ring of Honor, as he calls it. And he pointed out a masked fan who was in the crowd. And the first thing you notice about this masked fan, and he's got, you know, pretty good-sized arms for a guy just sitting in the crowd. So, you know, my guard was up. I honestly wasn't sure who it was. I probably should have figured it out. But the fan gets in the ring. He had, an Elite sign with him. And long story short on this, Cody's going to go live with the Elite web series that they do. And as he set up the phone and started taking video, I guess, then the muscular fan unmasked and revealed himself to be Dalton Castle. And Dalton Castle ended up getting the better of Cody, who fled the ring. And the fans went from loving Cody to chanting Dalton's name. So I believe this was the feud they were going to go with at the last pay-per-view. But Dalton had a back injury, so he's been sidelined for a bit. And it looks like, I don't believe he worked any of the shows on this tour, but he must be close enough. Maybe, I think they have TV coming up Friday. So hopefully he's going to be able to take part in that. And that should be a fun program. You know, Cody's been getting cheers against a lot of different people. It's a unique thing with the Bullet Club. There's always going to be fans that cheer for the Bullet Club guys, but if they're in there with the right opponent, then there are times where the fans end up siding with the other opponent, or you get that kind of mixed reaction. And I'm guessing there's going to be a lot more Castle fans in this case than there are Cody fans. And so Cody kind of has that versatility where he can play to the crowd, as we saw him do at the Atlanta television tapings in his hometown, or easily, flip that switch and become a heel. The first match on the show was Silas Young and Beer City Bruiser beating the team of best friends, Trent Beretta and Chucky T. 12 minutes and 55 seconds on this, and it was a good opening match. I like that they put over Young and Beer City Bruiser because, look, I know Beretta and Chuck Taylor are the established team here, and Young and Bruiser are to a point, but, you know, they've been kind of mid-card guys when they team together at best, and they're obviously trying to change that with Silas feuding with Jay Lethal, and Bruiser's kind of been the fall guy, and, you know, he runs interference and things like that, but when it's time for Lethal to kind of show some signs of life, he's usually beating up Beer City Bruiser, as we saw heading into the last Young and Lethal pay-per-view match, and so I think it's important to go ahead and put Young over here, and they did so in a way that I think protected Beretta and Taylor. You had Chucky T hitting Soul Food, which is Eat Defeat, on Young, and then he ran the ropes, but Bruiser hit him with a keg from behind, and then Young hit the Misery Finisher on him and got the pin. So Young and Bruiser again go over. A fine opening match. Then we went to the second match of the night, and it was Marty Scurll defeating Hiromu Takahashi in 14:25. I got to admit, a little bit surprised to see Scurll go over, only because in Ring of Honor, I mean, after he dropped the TV title, hey, he wins some, he loses some. I don't know why they had him drop the television title. I still don't really get that. They ended up going with Kushida and now Kenny King, and I just can't help but wonder, man, how much more meaningful would that TV championship feel had Skrull held it all this time and had beaten some impressive challengers? But, you know, it is what it is. Takahashi had the stuffed cat Daryl with him. Daryl has been married, apparently, to another stuffed animal. He had a photo of that. Crowd really into it. Takahashi, very impressive. This was one of the, I would say, the big three matches on the show that I was really looking forward to. And I felt like it delivered. This was really good. And I hope they have some plans in place to get Skrull back in that TV title picture. However, King on last week's television show, the current champion, was confronted by a number of potential contenders. None of them were, you know, Skrull wasn't one of them, is what I'm trying to say. So I'm not sure what they have in mind for Marty Skrull. I mean, he's doing fine as far as being with Bullet Club and all that. I just feel like they could do even more with him. But yeah, I mean, surprised to see him beat Takahashi. In the third match, it was Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian beating the team of Kushida and Cheeseburger. Unfortunately, there was the feed froze just as they were going to the finish of this match. So all we saw was the Addiction performing Celebrity Rehab. The feed froze when it came back. They were being named the winners, and it looked like Cheeseburger was the one who ended up taking the pinfall. I got to say, I watched this show on Fight TV. I think this was more of a issue that ROH had more than like Fight TV went down. I don't believe that was the case. And man, what a great bargain. I bring it up a lot because there's so much good free quality wrestling content available on there. And if you want to watch your pay-per-views from there, not just the online pay-per-views, but for instance, Impact Wrestling pay-per-views are now on there. Ring of Honor television show available for free, but also their pay-per-views, and obviously the online one, but also their regular pay-per-views. And, you know, they seem to just charge a decent price point, whereas if you want to order, let's say, the ROH HD feed on DirecTV, which is what I have, they want to charge you an extra. I think it's $10, which is just criminal to me. And so it's like, this is a hell of a bargain if you're somebody who kind of gets stuck with those upgrade charges for the HD feed. I definitely recommend it. But even if you're like, I don't order pay-per-views, there's a ton of wrestling available on that Fight TV app for free. Championship Wrestling out of Hollywood is one of them as well, or from Hollywood, I should say. A number of different things you can find on there, and so I definitely recommend it. I just use my phone, have the event on there, and Chromecast it, and it works very smoothly. I had one issue months ago, and it was one of those where I'm trying to cover the show live. I couldn't stick around to see if it was a temporary hiccup or not. Otherwise, it's been very smooth. Back to the match. They had Daniels and Kazarian setting up a table. They were going to put Cheeseburger through it. That's when Bully Ray came out, and he ended up chokeslamming Kazarian through the table while Daniels was mugging outside. He raised the hands of the babyfaces, and they left, and the heels were gone too, and that's when Bully Ray cut a promo. He talked about being in the same building in 1999 with Devon, And then he said, as I'm sure most of you know by now, it's about that time for me. And he said, listen, it's time. The fans were chanting no. And he said that for the first time he has to worry about his health and himself. The fans gave him a standing ovation, and he tipped his cap to the crowd. There were thank you, Bubba chants. And he bowed to the crowd and said it doesn't get any better than that. He thanked them again. And he said he doesn't think the fans understand that Chicago is one of his favorite places to wrestle. And he took the table that he drove Kazarian through and broke a piece off. And he called for a younger fan to enter the ring. And this, he found out the kid's name was Chase, and the fans were saying hi, Chase, and chanting and having fun with it. And he said that Chase represents every fan he's ever been in front of during his life. He said it's hard to thank everyone, so Chase is representing them all. And Bully said thank you and hugged Chase, and then gave him that piece of the table, saying it was most definitely the last table I will ever break. And then Bully had Chase hold the table piece in the air for the fans. He apologized to ROH and the talent for taking so much time. He said he always knew ROH was a place he wanted to be, and they were a perfect fit. He said if this is his last day, he wants to thank God for letting him step foot in a Ring of Honor ring. Bully was great here. You know, the match was fine. It just was, you know, nothing really wrong. It was what you would expect, considering who was involved. But Bully, man, he just, he's so good as a heel promo, whether it's just going for traditional heat or back in the ECW days, seeing him go way over the top and say some things that wouldn't make most television networks, certainly back in that time, really any of them, FX and Comedy Central are a little bit different these days, but with some of the language they allow. He just was a great heat magnet, but when he wants to turn it on, he can charm a crowd, and he was terrific here. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes. I don't think this is like Bully truly retiring, they just did a spot at the last pay-per-view where Jay hit him in the head with a table, and so it just looks like this is an angle to set up more between those two. It'll be interesting to see how they get there. They had Tommy Dreamer on last week's television show as well, confronting Jay. So hopefully it's a storyline. I assume it is, and it's being very well done. I'm enjoying it, even though that initial angle didn't go so well. I think they have it right back on track. Then the fourth match. This was actually listed as the top match on the ROH website going into the show. I'm happy they didn't make it the final match of the night. It was Cody, the Young Bucks, and Hangman Page defeating Alex Shelley, Chris Sabin, Jonathan Gresham, and Jay White in 14:25. I just don't get into the Search and Destroy faction. As I've said many times, I like the Motor City Machine Guns, I like Gresham, I like White, away from each other. When you put them all together, it's just, why? What purpose does this serve? What are they hoping to accomplish? There's never really been a mission statement. It's just, well, Search and Destroy, or I should say the Machine Guns are taking some younger talent under their wing. That's it. And it's not like there's any goal of domination or, there's just nothing. And so when they put them together, yeah, you're going to get a good match. That's fine, but I just want, I like matches that feel like they matter. And that even, take out the whole Search and Destroy element of this, an 8-man tag, it didn't feel meaningful, but the crowd was super into it because of the Bullet Club's involvement, and I found it interesting that the crowd completely, really turned on the Search and Destroy team, and they were ready for it, to their credit. They did a good job with that. I think they had to know going in, Bullet Club or moreover. And so they were playing into it by doing, at one point, the too sweet hand gesture, which, of course, WWE sent a cease and desist to the Young Bucks to prevent them from doing it. And so they got heat for doing that. When the Machine Guns who did that. I think actually probably all four members of Search and Destroy did that at one time or another. There was a fun spot where the idea was that Bullet Club was going to apply four sharpshooters at once. However, it was, I think, Jay White put Cody in the sharpshooter at the same time. So he had three Bullet Club members applying sharpshooters and Jay White applying the other. Well, the Bucks gave up theirs, gave him a super kick, double super kick, and then they did the four sharpshooter spot. Adam Page, really good here. Hangman Page, I used to talk with Zach Zimmerman about this, and I couldn't understand why Zach was down on him. And then I saw him work a little bit in New Japan, and I'm like, wow, it's night and day. This guy in New Japan is, what I saw wasn't bad, but you see him in Ring of Honor, and he's just become so much more confident. And I think it's because he went and worked for New Japan. But it really, I don't know. It's weird when he works there, what I've seen. And granted, I'm not seeing everything. So maybe there's some better outings that I just haven't watched from Hangman Page in New Japan. But ever since he started, ever since he was put with Bullet Club, it just seems like he's gaining more and more confidence when you see him in Ring of Honor. And I thought he was really good here, standing out in a positive way. He ended up performing his rite of passage finisher and pinning Gresham. And I do like that. Really, the Bullet Club guys are having a good time with this whole cease and desist thing. In a weird way, I think WWE did them a favor. And it's going to sound crazy because I'm sure they were, making a lot of merch, and the whole Too Sweet thing was so identified with the Young Bucks and all of that. But here's the deal. They were playing pretty nice when it came to WWE before. Ever since the cease and desist, well, the gloves are off a little bit. And yeah, you don't want to poke the bear and all that. I get it. But what can they do? They already sent the cease and desist over the Too Sweet. Okay, stop doing that. They've already made t-shirts that appeared to be pretty damn popular for the whole cease and desist thing. And so I just think now the gloves are off and they're going at WWE a little bit. And not that it's going to hurt WWE in any major way, but what it's doing is making them feel, the group, the Bullet Club, feel more rebellious, feel like they're doing it to spite WWE. And it's not just some throwback tribute to the Click or the NWO or DX, whatever you want to say. Now the gloves are off, and they're not doing anything too over the top. But when you hear Cody healing on Roman Reigns in this match, yeah, it was the other team working in the two sweets. But then later on in the night, they had Jimmy Jacobs in the crowd, which we'll get to. It definitely makes this group feel more rebellious than they did in the past. And so I think WWE in a weird way did them a favor. And I say that because I don't think that you would have seen the Bullet Club going to these lengths in the past. It's really been since WWE sent that cease and desist is when all this seemed to start up. They went to the 15-minute intermission here. It's just a graphic on the screen. They had some hard time getting that to stay up, but once it did, it was just like a there's nothing. I take advantage of that time. You have an audience that's watching this, and I'm not saying I don't even know what you give them, but give them something, whether it's a highlight package that kind of recaps your current storylines. I wouldn't feel the need to throw in another match from a past show or something like that, but do something with it rather than just here's your graphic for 15 minutes. I know they're trying to sell merch in the building. Is 15 minutes really going to do it? I mean, how many? I mean, they're printing money when it comes to the Bullet Club stuff anyway, it seems like. I got to think that most of those fans are going to get their stuff before or after the show, whether you have a 15-minute intermission or not. And, if this were just a typical show and you wanted to have an intermission, no problem. But as soon as it turns into a pay-per-view, even an online pay-per-view, I just say don't do it. I don't think it's worth it. I don't think you're missing out on that much money. And especially a show like this that ended up going so long. Well, that's 15 minutes, here that could have been spared. And speaking of sparing time, next up, they went to an unadvertised match. The Dogs, Rhett Titus and Will Ferrara, who have slowly been getting together on television. They were an official team here. They beat Justin Pusser and Brian Johnson. And one of them had, or both of my guests, had Miss Jasmine in the corner. And this was basically a chance for, I think it was supposed to be a dog showcase. And it ended up going 5 minutes, a little more back and forth than it needed to be even. But Titus and Ferrara performed a double team move on Johnson and got the win. There was at one point, Titus slapped the dick of his partner and then picked him up in suplex position, but dropped him face first on Pusser. So it's kind of an interesting thing. Here's the thing: crowd didn't give a damn about this. I think I'm guessing this was like ROH trying to cram everybody on the show, come up with a quick popcorn match to let people maybe to sell more merch even. I don't know, but this just didn't need to be here. Granted, it only went 5 minutes, but when you add entrances and all of that, basically they've just spent what 20 minutes between, well, a little bit more than 20 minutes even because of the entrances. Like I say, probably with the intermission, the entrances, and this match time, well, this is 25 minutes of my life that I wish I had back. And I think it would have made for a better show had things just been tighter and they didn't have that long, instead of being 3 hours and 50 minutes, whatever it turned out to be, you're looking at probably, what, 325? That's a little more doable. rather than have everything feel like it just dragged later than it needed to. Jay Briscoe did show up after the match, and he ended up beating up Pusser and Johnson briefly, and then he said that basically, you know, if you're going to walk into my house, wipe your feet, I think was the line, something like that, to kind of justify why he beat them up. And then he addressed his brother Mark, saying that they need to get back to being the baddest team on the planet. He said Mark has been worried about the TV title and the six-man titles, but all got him was a spot at home with a busted elbow, because Mark suffered an elbow injury at one of the Global Wars Tour events and had to be replaced, which we'll get to here in a little bit. And he told Mark to heal up because it's time for the Briscoes to take this shit over. I mean, Mark has been the one saying that Jay is out of control, that sort of a thing. And so I don't know if they're working toward another program between them. I'm hoping they just get them back together. I guess they must be teaming them up again as heels. And, you know, we saw Tommy Dreamer there. So my guess has been, even before Dreamer came in, I'm like, are we going to get the Briscoes as heels against Bully and Tommy? I guess we'll have to wait and see. Shane Taylor made his entrance out of nowhere. Flat reaction. Talked about how he gets paid to fight and put people down. And one of the biggest paydays in the world is when you set foot in the ring with Suzuki Goon. And he said he was cashing in because of Mark Briscoe's injury. And he said ROH officials made him the partner of Jay Lethal and Kenny King, whether they like it or not. And then in the sixth match, it was Minoru Suzuki, Davey Boy Smith Jr., and Lance Archer defeating Jay Lethal, Kenny King, and Shane Taylor in 16:50. They did the handshake spot before the match, and I was cringing when I'm like, oh no, because it was Smith and Archer were part of this, and I'm like, you can't call yourself the Killer Elite Squad and shake hands. But fortunately, they ended up attacking the babyface. I'm like, all right, good. This was all about Minoru Suzuki. He was a lot of fun here. Got into a chop fest with Jay Lethal, no selling his chops and outright laughing at him. And the crowd was really receptive to this. And he ended up applying a sleeper on Taylor late. And he'd struggled a couple of times to get him up for a pile driver earlier. This time around, he got the big man up and performed his pile driver and pinned him. And then he had the referee raise his arm and then kicked the referee. So Minoru Suzuki just kind of doing his thing. He's come off much better both on last week's television show and certainly here than he did in that main event with Cody, where it just was, I think it seemed like they were short on time. I don't know, but he's been a lot of fun since that the initial match, which was just kind of there. But that was fun. And, you know, it is kind of weird that I'm still, you know, last week's show's fresh in my mind on television. You have Kenny King out there saying he's going to defend the title at every event, and here he is in a six-man. But I'm guessing this was booked long before. I'm guessing they had the lineup for this kind of planned out before that. I do hope they follow through on that and have Kenny King defending the title on a very regular basis, even though it kind of goes against the whole TV title concept. Then we ended up with the broadcast team talking briefly. And Rick Abani said that he would try to be impartial, and that's because his broadcast partner Colt Cabana was working the match, and it was Colt Cabana pinning Toru Yano. And this was fun. This was just two comedy guys doing their thing, having fun with they each had a DVD. Colt ended up giving his away. Yano, I think, took money for it and tucked it in his knee pad. Yano's the guy who likes to take off the turnbuckle pad, so they had some fun with that, where he took it off and Colt was standing on the ring apron and Yano wanted him to get back in the ring. And Cabana declined there and ended up, the crowd ended up chanting no means no. They ended up having a turnbuckle battle where they were hitting each other, hitting pad to pad, and Colt got the better of it and ended by knocking the turnbuckle pad out of Yano's hand. Yano begged him to give it back, and Colt tossed it up into the air, and as Yano's waiting to catch it, he takes a shot from Colt in the gut with the other pad, and then you had late in the match, Colt Cabana and Yano shoved the referee back and forth, saying okay each time, and then you had Yano low-blowing Cabana as Cabana was checking on the referee. Yano brought some tape in, wrapped Colt's wrists, and then pulled off another turnbuckle pad, and Yano charged at Colt with the pad, but Colt blocked it with his elbow and ended up getting the win. So Colt Cabana goes over. Didn't get a time on that one, but the only thing I didn't really care for, and I know it's just, this is probably old school of me, When they removed the pads, Colt had his head slammed into the exposed turnbuckles, a couple of different exposed turnbuckles, I think several times. That, I mean, we've just seen it over the year. I don't know. In my mind, that's been established as when that happens once, that guy's out. You know, as soon as his head hits that exposed turnbuckle, that's it. And here, even in a comedy match, I'm just like, I don't need to see that. I was really hopeful, and it didn't happen, but I was like, they better not have an exposed turnbuckle spot later in the show where somebody acts like they've been shot, and they didn't. But a very fun match. I definitely enjoyed it. Colt, super over with his hometown crowd, of course, and so just a good, lighthearted comedy match. Then in the eighth match, it was Will Ospreay defeating Flip Gordon in 15 minutes and 20 seconds. This was a lot of fun. This was really good. Two high flyers, gymnast types that can do all these crazy moves. And this was clearly, even though Gordon lost the match, meant to be like his breakout match because the announcers were really putting him over even in defeat. Ospreay put him over afterward in defeat even. And so I like it. Gordon is a very talented guy. When I watch Flip Gordon, there is some young AJ Styles there just because of the athleticism. I'm guessing there's a gymnast background and that sort of a thing. And he's still fairly green, even though he executes some of the craziest high spots you've ever seen. I guess the thing I'm waiting to see that I think Gordon is going to need to develop, and I'm not saying he does, you know, he's way off on this. AJ Styles is a guy that you get caught up in the moment, and if you're a fan who just wants to suspend his disbelief watching the match, you can believe AJ Styles is having a fight. Flip Gordon, depends on the match. You know, I've seen him on TV do too many flips, and to the point that Whitmer was talking on commentary about, yeah, they should have a flip counter graphic. I'm like, oh God, no, don't. You know, less is more when it comes to this. You know, make his high spot stand out as special, and they've done a better job of that lately. And so I want to feel like when I'm watching Flip Gordon, it's not about what's the next big crazy move he's going to do. I want to feel like he's a guy who's in a fight that can pull out these crazy moves when he needs to. I shouldn't even really be criticizing all this much because had a hell of a match. This was really good, and I hope they have a follow-up in place because keep in mind, we saw Will Ospreay and Jay White tear it up on a pay-per-view, and there was no real follow-up on television with either guy. Ospreay, very part-time with Ring of Honor. Jay White on loan from New Japan, but they easily could have followed up and done more with him to make him feel like a star than they did coming out of that match. I would assume they do with Gordon. He's under ROH contract. And so hopefully at these upcoming television tapings, they have a plan in place to really launch him. But this was great. This was worth going out. This is worth going out of your way to see if you haven't, if you didn't see the show on Sunday night. This was a lot of fun. And then it was main event time in the ninth match of the evening. It was Kenny Omega defeating Yoshihashi to retain the IWGP United States Championship in 24 minutes and 55 seconds. This went on longer than it needed to in a way. Here's the thing. The first half of the match, it just, the crowd wasn't buying into Yoshihashi. And Omega's giving him a lot of the match and trying to make it feel suspenseful, and it just didn't. I don't think anyone bought into any Yoshihashi near fall. Maybe one very late, but it just, you know, it's kind of, that crowd was there to see Kenny Omega. And Yoshihashi just wasn't, in their mind, a credible opponent. You know, some of it, too, is Omega just fairly recently won this U.S. championship on the Access specials. So I don't think people were expecting him to drop the new championship here either. So even if he was in with a different opponent, they might not have completely bought in, but I think a different opponent would have been a better idea. I just didn't sense that this crowd saw Yoshihashi as a star. They weren't buying in. Now, it didn't go just 25 minutes between them. They actually had a frickin' ref bump. And that led to Marty Scurll and the Young Bucks and Hangman Page all coming out, and Cody for that matter. And this was all to set up 10 boots was the idea. Some in the crowd seemed like they knew what they were talking about. Others just kind of sat there. I don't think this 10 boots thing was as nearly as over as I thought it was going to be. But the idea is that all of the guys from Bullet Club, other than Omega, got in the corner and found a way to get all of their feet up. And the idea was that he was going to try to run Yoshihashi into 10 boots at once. Well, on the other side, you had Will Ospreay, Flip Gordon, Chuck Taylor, Beretta, and Yano run out, and they set up for 10 boots, and so it was a battle to see who could get it first. Once the crowd kind of figured out what they were doing, they were kind of into it. It just was the 10 boots thing was like, whatever. Didn't do much for me, but they ended up, and Yoshihashi was the guy who ended up being run into the 10 boots, and then Omega performed a power bomb and got a two count. They did the big rapid fire spot sequence that you normally see at the end of a like an 8-man tag in WWE or something like that. And in this case, it was with the guys. Well, it was everybody who was out there performing these, one big spot after another on each other. That woke up the crowd. And so, even though the match at 24:55 seems like a long time, considering it was Yano challenging for this title that nobody believed he was going to win. All of, and as down as I am on ref bumps and that sort of a thing, it really was all of this stuff with the other members that got over. And I mean, the crowd loved Omega, don't get me wrong. He was the star of the show in their mind. Flip Gordon was one of the guys, if I didn't mention that, who was out there with Ospreay and company. So Ospreay continuing to kind of put him over. You had Omega hitting Yoshihashi with the knee to the head and then performing his one-winged angel finisher and getting the win. So Kenny Omega retains that IWGP US Championship. And then it was time for a post-match angle. You had the Bullet Club members celebrating inside the ring. Cody took the mic and asked the crowd to raise their hands if they were lifelong wrestling fans. He talked about how cool wrestling was at different points in the 90s, and he told them to remember now because wrestling has never been cooler, he said. And he thanked New Japan Pro Wrestling, but said it was time to introduce the man who carried New Japan on his back. He called him Atlas. And Kenny Omega took the mic and thanked the fans for the warm welcome and the merch sales. And he said he doesn't plan to sell merch to impolite, or doesn't like to sell merch to impolite people, but they were a joy. And he said that he's not a full-time member of the Ring of Honor roster, and he apologized for that. He said, "I represent New Japan Pro Wrestling by contract only." He said he really represents Bullet Club. And he was about to close out the show when Matt Jackson of the Young Bucks took the mic and brought up that it was the last night of the Global Wars tour, and he wanted to take a Bullet Club selfie. Well, none of the wrestlers had a camera on them, and so I just thought, I'm like, okay, they're just going to bring a fan in from the crowd to do it or something like that. And they started playing it up that way, asking if anyone had a phone. They looked around the crowd and found Jimmy Jacobs, the WWE creative team member who was let go for, God forbid, taking and posting a photo with Bullet Club when they did their Raw invasion not all that long ago. And they ended up taking a selfie with Jacobs at who was, I think, like in the second row by this point. And it was Nick Jackson that said, "Sorry, we got your ass fired, Jimmy." And the Bullet Club members then returned to the ring, and Omega led the crowd in a chant to close the show. The Bullet Club members, super, super over. They definitely do feel like the coolest guys in the room. And it was a nice touch to have Jimmy Jacobs there. I wasn't expecting it. I probably should have been. that was cool. How much attention that story's received, with Jacobs being let go by WWE for that, and then turning around just a short time later and appearing in the crowd. It'll be interesting to see what he ends up doing with Ring of Honor. Is he going to be back on a regular basis as a wrestler? He obviously, he was respected in WWE by some, at least. Maybe, the man was fired, but still, he was respected within WWE, and so it'll be interesting to see if ROH decides to use him as a member of their creative staff. I think it'd be a nice idea, but it'll be interesting to see what's next for him. But a smart move by him if he has no intention of going back to WWE. And really, that's the thing with this whole Bullet Club thing. If anybody's like, "Well, man, if they start poking that WWE bear, they might not get in there." It seems like, now Jacobs may be a different story as somebody who works, creatively, worked, I should say, creatively with them. But how many guys have we seen take jabs at WWE and Vince McMahon over the years? They get hired. So I don't think, can you cross a certain line of no return? I don't know. You would have thought Ultimate Warrior would have done it back in the day, and they still celebrate him. And, there's been so many examples of people who have badmouthed the company or said or done things that at the time seem like, oh, they're never going to bring them in. And they ultimately do. If they feel like they can make money with you, they're going to do it. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. Jacobs, like I say, could be a different story because he's not a wrestler that they brought in to wrestle. I mean, he is a wrestler, but they brought him in to work creatively. But yeah, curious to see where he goes from here. And a recommended show. For $19.99, you can see this show. There's plenty of good wrestling on there. And it's, good. If you're somebody who likes longer shows, well, this fits that category. I would have, again, trimmed out the 15-minute intermission, the post intermission tag match, that popcorn match that was unadvertised and people didn't seem to care about. One thing I did like about ROH operating, though, without your usual pay-per-view time limit, is that they incorporated more mic work than we normally see. More often than not on the ROH pay-per-views, it's match, 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 match. You don't, they, you're going to get a video package in between, but there's very little mic work. And I'm somebody who wants a little bit more than just all matches when I watch a pay-per-view. I do like some mic work, whether it's a pre-match promo discussing the match or a post-match promo discussing it. This kind of, they had a little more freedom. You had Jay Briscoe talking, you had Bully Ray talking, you had the Bullet Club members, Cody opened the show talking, and I like that. So I'd like to see them be disciplined enough to say, you know what, not everyone has to make our pay-per-view events. And it may ruffle some feathers, but hey, we need to worry about what makes for the best pay-per-view product. And if we need to leave somebody off the show this time, well, hopefully they're not going to boo-boo face it, and they're just going to work that much harder to get on the show the next time. But do what's in the best interest of that pay-per-view product. Now, they may feel like, but we are. We are all about wrestling, wrestling, and nothing but wrestling, so help you got. But I think this show is a good example. And, hey, did the Bullet Club thing go a little long at the end? Sure. But I think this show is an example that a little bit of a mixture, give people a chance to kind of come down from the matches a little bit rather than just throwing another one right at them. I think that's something this is a show that ROH can learn from and incorporate that into their regular pay-per-view. Leave a match out. Leave yourself 10 minutes for a couple of different promos on the show at different points. I think there's a way to do that. But that's going to do it for today. As I said, you can join me for live coverage of WWE Raw tonight as the show airs on USA Network. Jake Barnett will be by on Tuesday with his live review. Jake and I are going to get together on Wednesday for the .NET Weekly audio show that will be available exclusively for .NET members. If you enjoyed this long-form audio review, know that this is the type of thing that .NET members hear after all the major pay-per-views, after Raw, after SmackDown, after all the television shows. We do long-form audio reviews. Once in a while, you guys hear them on the all-access side at pwaudio.net, but know that they are there after each and every show for the .NET members. If you're interested in membership to the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net, all you have to do is visit the main page, click into the sign-up area once you are there, find the pricing option that works best for you. We would love to have you sample what we do. Of course, live coverage of WWE TLC coming up. I am not going to attend the show in person. I'm actually going to just kind of stick with what we normally do. So I will have live coverage on Sunday night, and then Jake Barnett and I will get together after that show as well to give you guys the members, the audio review. And then ProWrestling.net Live should be back on Monday. We had to cancel the last one just because I had roofers in the area, and I can still hear them banging in the background, but at least they're not overhead anymore. That will be Monday, 3 Central, 4 Eastern time. So that'll be October 23rd. That will be the day that Will Pruitt and I get together and take your calls on ProWrestling.net Live. Remember, we are live the Mondays after WWE pay-per-view events. You want to help us out, help spread the word? Hey, rate us on iTunes or anywhere else that takes such reviews. Give us a follow. Whatever you can do to help spread the word about the All Access Daily Podcast and ProWrestling.net is greatly appreciated. Thank you so much for listening today, and I will talk to you guys again very soon. Take care.